Terrific day for a drive.
Yeah, it's beautiful country out here.
A frog and a bear seeing America.
Moving right along in search of good times and good news. With good friends you can't lose.
This could become a habit.
Opportunity knocking, let's reach out and grab it.
Yeah.
Together we'll nab it.
We'll hitchhike, bus, or yellow cabot.
Cabot?
Moving right along. Footloose and fancy free.
Getting there is half the fun, come share it with me. I'm Zach Burgee. Welcome to AnCast. My co-host Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey guys.
How you doing, buddy?
I am good.
Yep.
Yep.
Have you seen any movies lately?
I have. Oh, yeah? I went and saw Hustlers.
Yeah.
With Jennifer Lopez.
That's a good one, huh?
Yeah, that one was really good.
I'll sum it up here. So that movie is I did not expect to just love the hell out of that. But yeah. I did. And it's about strippers who take it to the man. basically start robbing Wall Street motherfuckers. I was just like, wow, really? Are you doing this? That's by Adam McKay, who also makes the show. Well, he didn't direct it. Adam McKay and Will Ferrell. Have a production company called Gary Sanchez Productions that they changed for this one. They changed the production logo.
To Gloria.
To Gloria Sanchez.
Okay, yeah. That's what that was about. Because I remember noticing the title card before the movie started. I was like, I've never heard of that production company. And I did notice Will Ferrell in the end credits.
Yeah.
I didn't know. That's good.
Yeah, it's good. I loved it. And they handed it over to a female director and a female writer. And I just thought it was intense and amazing and
really funny.
Yeah, really, really funny. Really good. That one was, perfect. Thumbs up. Don't miss it.
I was going to say, I really liked the relationship between Jennifer Lopez's character and Constance Wu.
Right.
It's just really good.
Yeah. Well, it's a little gay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little bit. Just enough. You know. Yeah.
Come sit in my fur coat.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That I thought that movie was spectacular. Second favorite, I think, for the year for me, behind Ready or Not.
Oh wow! So it's been a good couple weeks for you then.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, I go.
Wait, but what about Lion King though?
Well, no one likes to hear me talk about the Lion King, Lindsay.
Are those top out above the Lion King for you?
Well, no, but
okay.
That's special. That's separate. That's okay.
A category of its own.
Yes, obviously. Yeah, no, Hustlers was, I thought, really strong. It is basically just Goodfellas, which I don't know if you've seen Martin Scorsese's movie Goodfellas.
I mean, it's been a while since I saw them throw Coke in the toilet, but I have seen that movie. Helicopters, man. They're coming for me.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's basically structured the same way. It's kind of the same kind of thing, but this one is, marginalized sex workers and women of color, which is really good. We're gonna make Goodfellas, except it's for marginalized sex workers and women of color. Come on, that's good stuff. That's the good stuff.
Yeah, so there's great cameos throughout the whole thing. You got Lizzo in there, Cardi B, Usher makes an appearance.
Yeah, Usher, yeah.
When he rolls in, that's just the best.
I was I literally said to myself quietly, is that fucking Usher?
And Jennifer Lopez just like looks at him. She's like, what's your name?
J-Lo. Jenny from the Block fucking brings it, by the way. Like, it was great to see her again.
Yeah. I like the whole entourage when they do their walk. Like when the sisters show up and then they do their walk at the bar.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Really good. I really liked it. The other thing I saw recently was I finally got around to Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh, okay. I've seen that.
Yeah. I really liked that one, too. Now, I don't want to, you know, get in trouble for liking too many things the way that you know, the internet. But that one was also excellent. And I thought maybe the strongest Marvel thing since Thor Ragnarok. Like,
okay.
It was really strong. Admittedly, mostly that's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Right. I was going to say, I felt like the second half was a lot better than the first half. Like, when it was kind of the stuff prior to Jake Gyllenhaal's reveal as the villain was, for me, like, they were doing all the country hopping and stuff. I wasn't really into that. But once it got rolling and we knew what he was up to, I was engaged. I was totally into it.
It's very critical of superhero movies. Like, it is extremely meta. Like, Gyllenhaal's character, and I have to believe that Gyllenhaal, you know, came up with this shit himself. Because it's a little nuts, because he literally calls Tony Stark an alcoholic man-child.
Which, I mean, true.
True. And then says, like, no one gives a shit about you unless you're wearing a cape and shoot lasers out of your hands. But guess what I have? A cape and lasers.
Yeah, he's like a superhero but his whole shtick is like he's made up of all the underpaid workers from like Stark Industries. They're like manufacturing all of it because he has no actual superpowers himself, right? So it's like he got the tech guy and he got the PR lady and he got, you know, all these people who kind of got screwed over by capitalism.
Yeah. That's a good one.
To come help him like with his villain persona. And I mean, on the other hand, you know, he kind of reminded me a little bit of Steve Jobs. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because there's like a scene where you see him in that turtleneck before he got like axed out or something. Like, he's not a good guy on his own. He's kind of sociopathic, I guess. But like all the people that are helping him, you can kind of understand why they've, you know, decided to do that.
Yeah, it's very empathetic. Strongest villain, I think, since and most sort of ethically complicated.
Yeah.
Since Killmonger from Black Panther.
Yeah.
Reminded me of that. Like,
it was definitely a new twist. It was definitely like a fresh idea as far as like bringing a villain into the franchise. I can't remember the end of it. Is he dead by the end?
I don't remember either.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I think he uploads video that reveals Spider-Man's identity or something at the end there, because that's sort of the after credit teaser.
Yeah, right. And I thought it was kind of, I really thought that movie was kind of fucking around with the Marvel universe, like,
yeah,
commenting on it directly, which, you know, isn't that what you want?
Like,
smart, you know, things that are smart and commentative, isn't that what you want?
Either smart and commentative or completely like fun and ridiculous. So Thor Ragnarok or this.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So I've been playing a game lately.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it kind of ties back into Hustlers. Like, did you ever see Jennifer Lopez in The Cell?
I sure did.
Well, if you play Somnium Files, it is the exact same thing.
Okay, so this is who? What else did they make? They made
the Notary Game trilogy. So like 999 Doors and
All right.
Yeah. So it's very much like that. Those games there where it's, I mean, there's like a serious element to it, but there's also a lot of like Danganronpa kind of humor in there too.
Sure.
The game's really fun, though. It just came out. You can get it on PC, and I think probably PlayStation. It might be on Xbox. I'm not sure. But you're a futuristic detective with an artificial intelligence eyeball trying to solve a series of murders.
An artificial intelligence eyeball?
Yeah.
You have like a robot eye?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
It seems like the creator really went with the as many puns from the title as he could, because it's called AI. So that could be artificial intelligence, but it's also the Japanese word for love, but it's also a homonym for I as in your eyeball, and just ran with it.
Well, sounds clever.
Yeah. If you have played those games, like one of the signature parts of the Notary game things is that you have a flow chart for your choices as you're playing, right? And then you can start hopping around back and forth. But the element of hopping back and forth also is explained in the story. And it also has the same sort of, so it has that same gimmick, and it also does the, it has that same gimmick, but also a lot of the weird pseudo like sci-fi stuff too. Like the Nonary games get really into a whole bunch of hypothetical like science and theories and things like that. Like while playing them, I felt like I became very, very smart, and then immediately forgot all of that as soon as I was done, because it's not useful outside of the game itself. And this is like that all over again. So it can be a little light novel-y in that aspect, but it never gets like too complicated.
I never got into that stuff because it was just too a little, you know, I'm just not really a light novel kind of guy. Like,
yeah,
just not into it. But that sounds, you know, interesting at least.
Yeah, you go brain diving.
Did you enjoy it?
It's probably going to be a time intensive game. I'm probably about 10 hours into it already. I've already hit like the end of one plot thread and had to go back and like divert the plot thread. So I'm nowhere near like having a full understanding of whatever the story is, but it is definitely like my type of game. And it's not too dark. It's actually pretty funny. A lot of the time it's got some of that anime humor style stuff in it. So you never get like really bogged down with like the murders or anything like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway. hey, Lindsay, what's in the news?
We just got a little bit of news today. I think the biggest one is that Universal Studios in Osaka finally have a release or an opening window for their Super Nintendo World area, which I am excited about.
Super Nintendo World, that's going to be so fucking good. That's my wheelhouse.
yeah. So, I mean, they're going to have these. This one in Osaka, I think, is opening first, but there's definitely one scheduled for California and also Singapore. And I haven't heard one about Florida, but I would be surprised if they didn't put one in there.
Yeah.
I've seen leaked model photos for the areas.
Yeah. It looks so like, good.
Yeah, there's one section that totally just looks like Donkey Kong.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's like the expansion, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they're going to open.
That's the downloadable content.
park. Now, what I'm really waiting for. So I'm very excited about this. And the construction walls are already up here in California. I spend probably too much time at Universal Studios here in California. And they've already got the construction walls up for this. And I'm very excited about it. But I was a little disappointed that Donkey Kong is going to be the expansion.
You want that to open first it at all?
No, I want it to be Zelda. Like, be Legend of Zelda. Like,
can you imagine if they put in a Hyrule Castle?
They're hanging on to that, I think. They're like, look, we're going to do it.
How could you not?
We'll do Zelda, but you're going to get this stuff first. And
imagine how many kids you could sell like Hyrule's shields and swords to run around the park in and little Link caps.
I just want a good ride. I just want a good ride. Like, they could make an incredible Legend of Zelda ride. So
yeah,
very excited about all of that. Like,
yeah, The two rides that they have right now, it's supposed to be a Super Mario Kart ride and a Yoshi's Adventure ride.
Which is interesting because, so apparently, what the article that we put up said that you're going to get a score.
When
you go on these rides, which is interesting because you and I were just at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where you also get a score at the end of your ride, right? Mm-hmm. Which is new. This is new, but there's sort of game. I don't know what the phrase is here. Like, you're sort of gametizing theme park rides, which is definitely a trend. That's definitely something that's happening. And I'm not so sure that I appreciate it because, you know, I don't want to be judged. I just want to sit and enjoy your experience. Like, you know,
It also worries me. Like, I wouldn't be as thrilled if the rides were just simulation rides, too. Yeah. Like, if you make me a Mario Kart ride, I want to sit in a real fucking cart that's on, like, a track or whatever. And, you know, fucking take me through an area and make the cart spin around when I hit a shell or something or slip on a banana peel. And,
yeah, you want the physical, like, you know, real experience. That's what you want.
I don't want to just move around in a simulation with a screen of Super Mario Kart track or something.
Well, who knows what they'll actually do with that, but I'm excited to see it, like, and I will.
I mean, so I saw some of the model photos for the Mario area too, and it was I grew up playing Super Mario World. Was my first Mario title that I really played, like, a lot of for the Super Nintendo. So I've got all the nostalgia factor for that game and playing it with my brother. So the idea that, like, we could go and there'd be giant blocks and, you know, like, piranha plants around and stuff like that while we walk around,
it's exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. I'm very excited.
We'll get that shit pretty soon, I think. Anyway, anything else?
The only other thing is that, the NHK television program, they've been doing a couple of these, like, user poll things for really big franchises. They did one for Gundam where you were supposed to pick the best Gundam song, best mecha, best character, whatever. They've done three of those so far, and the next one that's coming up is for Rumiko Takahashi.
Oh.
So that might be kind of interesting. It's supposed to air next month, and I was just wondering, like, what's your favorite Takahashi stuff?
Lum.
Okay.
Urusei Yatsura. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I'm not, like, that huge a Takahashi fan. Like, she makes a lot of good stuff, and I respect her very much as an artist. But, you know, I haven't really revisited Ranma recently, or Inuyasha, or... And her most recent stuff, like Rene, is like, you know.
Has it gotten kind of samey at this point? Because when I was writing the article, I noticed that, man, of all of her stuff that's been adapted to television, like, there's over 700 TV episodes and 1,100 characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get to pick through all that for the poll, and it's just like, some of those have to kind of be the same thing at this point, don't they?
Well, yeah, most artists only have, like, you know, a handful of ideas, and they repeat themselves, and Takahashi certainly repeats itself.
Yeah.
So, that's it's definitely Lum, though, for me. What about you?
Rama 1/2 was probably the one that I watched the most of. That was the one that I kind of latched onto.
That had, like, one season worth of jokes.
Oh, I have not watched all of it by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I've probably watched various episodes in the first two seasons. I like the characters well enough, but I've never sat through all of it. I like the middle sister, the one that's always out to make some cash.
Yeah, right. I can't remember her name.
I think it's Natsumi.
Right, yeah.
Is that it? Okay, yeah. So,
is she the one with a pizza shovel?
No, that's Ukyo. Oh, she's the one. Okay. That's the one who runs the Okonomiyaki cart.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one I remember watching on satellite was the original, like, Mermaid Saga one, and I think that's the only really dark thing she ever did.
She did Fire Tripper, which.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was her. It's also kind of dark. She did like a series of horror stuff that, you know, it kind of went, but people don't really remember it anymore.
I guess maybe because I saw it when I was young. So there's an episode from Mermaid Saga where it's like, you know, about some kid who's, when you eat the mermaid flesh, it makes you immortal. And he ate it as a kid. So now he's been stuck as a child forever or something like that. And I don't know, that episode always stuck with me. It was, you know, pre that Cowboy Bebop episode. So.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, you can go to the website and vote. People listening, if that's what you want to do, get your vote in for Rumiko Takahashi's mega poll. But that's kind of all I got in news this week. All
right. Well.
Yeah, it's all right.
The Super Nintendo World.
Super Nintendo World, though, man. Oh, man. Oh, man.
It's gonna be good. Hey, so in terms of anime, which we are supposed to talk about on this show, there's a film that came out this week in theaters that is called Promare.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know if you got around to this.
I've seen half of it.
Oh, only half.
Only half. I've seen up to where they meet out at that lake.
All right, so
I've seen up to there.
Here is the film. It is a big-hearted firefighter who's kind of an asshole.
Is he an asshole or is he just sort of a...
Yeah, he's kind of an asshole.
Okay.
I think. Anyway, he comes around. You know, he gets to it.
But he grows over the course of the movie.
There's a race of people called the Burnish that can burst flames right out of their hands. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a metaphor for... Hiroyuki Imaishi, who directed this, it's kind of a metaphor for creative people. And the firefighter is kind of a sort of a stand-in for, like, do you understand creative people? Like, and so what they do is they fight a lot. And then at the end of the film, they fucking kiss.
And that sounds, how most relationships develop, right?
Yeah, right. I loved this movie. Like, it might be, I think it's probably on my top five for the year. I tend to gravitate a little bit more towards Hollywood stuff. But this was like, oh shit. And it is the trigger ethos. Mm-hmm. Like, Hiroyuki, if you've seen a lot of Hiroyuki Imaishi stuff, this is everything he's ever said in one thing that's like, I don't know, it's like 2 hours long, something like that. And they just get right to it. Like, they don't waste your time. They get right to it. And it's fantastic. Like, it's really, really rowdy, really, really loud. The dub, which is by Mike Sinner-Nicholas and Stephanie Shea, they dubbed that, and the dub is just A+. Like, really, really good. Johnny Young Bosch just fucking brings it. Like, it, but I mean, you would have to, like, based on the material, if you're like, oh, wait, I'm going to voice that character who is just screaming and posing at the screen constantly. Like, man, it's good. I really, really loved it. You should check it out.
Finish it. I should finish it. Yeah. One thing that stuck out with me when I watched it, I mean, so it takes place in America, doesn't it? Or in a place that looks a lot like New York City.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And there's a conflict between the Burnish, the firefighters, and then this aptly named other group. What are they called? Frozen Force or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and I remember I watched it at Anime Expo, and I was sitting next to a fellow journalist, my friend Kyle, and he had already seen it. And so Frozen Force comes out, they break into this pizzeria to arrest this guy who, to my knowledge, has not committed any crimes. He's being arrested just for the sake of being a Burnish.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're this marginalized group. And the similarities between current political things going on in the United States, like, it stuck with me immediately. And I looked over at Kyle, and he was already staring at me because he knew I was going to have a reaction. Like, I looked at him, and he was already looking at me, and then he just, like, nodded really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can't believe they just did this. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that they did, but I can't believe it.
Well, if you paid attention to what Imaishi has made, you know, this is, it really is a distillation of everything that he's ever made. Like, and he does that. It's not subtle. Like, it's
right.
It's very direct about its political goals.
You can see a similar thread, in Kill la Kill with the idea of uniforms and dress, right, and trying to make that completely homogenized in that series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's in favor of the creatives. Like, that's that's kind of what he's saying here is, man, they fucking kiss at the end of the movie.
Is it a kiss or is it CPR?
It's CPR, but come on.
Okay.
The fucking kissing.
I'll let you have it.
It's so good. I just flipped for that one. Like, I really thought it was intense and like exactly what I would want from like a trigger movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and Leo's really cute.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. Indeed. Most people think he's a girl.
I admit that before the trailer came out, I also thought he was a girl.
Yeah.
Because we have the same haircut. And I was like, oh, okay. And
yeah, then when I tell people, like, oh, no, that's a boy.
Yeah. He has a very, like, masculine voice, like his voice actor. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's jarring at first, but then you're like, oh, okay.
They weren't messing around with this one. Like, yeah, not at all. It's a flex. Like, it's a big flex.
And it looks gorgeous, like, the entire time, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
I thought the fight scene in the beginning looked really good.
Yeah, the fight scene in the beginning does look good. And most of the movie looks great. There's a few scenes that are, like,
a little iffy.
A little wobbly, but, like, that's Trigger. So, what do you expect?
Yeah, and it's got that, like, really enriched kind of pastel color palette.
Yeah,
that I would, color, like, paint my house to look like this movie. It's,
the color, yeah, is incredible. Like,
yeah,
the entire time, the color is fucking amazing. Like, yeah, anyway, so they had a limited event this past week, but which was mostly sold out from what I've heard. But it's going to open wide on early October, I think. So
yeah, I have to look it up, but I remember they've added a couple more dates, so it must be doing well.
Don't miss it. Go see it. It's so good.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things this year. Like, just incredible. Very intense. I liked it very, very much. What else is new?
Well, I watched all of Astra Lost in Space.
Astra Lost in Space. Okay, so what is this show about?
This show is Nickelodeon Space Cases for a New Generation.
Now, I'm old.
Yes.
I don't remember Space Cases.
Okay, well, it's most notable because I think it was the breakout show for that lady from, most people know her from Firefly, Jewel something. Anyway, she's in that show as a girl from Saturn, and she has a rainbow wig. Space Cases is like a kid version of Lost in Space, where a bunch of kids from other planets are in a class on a spaceship, and it gets eaten by a wormhole, and they end up far from home and are trying to make it back. And it's sort of like a comedy drama from Nickelodeon.
Hey,
it's also the same exact plot as this.
I was about to say, hey, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. It's the same exact plot as this. I don't think this is, you know, ripping off Space Cases by any means. It's just, it was funny to me when I watched it and I was like, oh, I remember this. I used to watch this on SNICK. So
Jesus.
None of our listeners are going to know what SNICK is.
SNICK reference.
So it was right after Clarissa Explains It All in Ren and Stimpy. Anyway.
Okay. Well, what's
okay. So Astra Lost in Space is a, again, you got a group of kids. We're in the future now, so I guess part of your regularly scheduled curriculum is doing a short stint on another planet for like I guess it's like outdoor school of the future. But they all get eaten by a mysterious phenomenon that throws them out into space. They don't know where they are, but fortunately there's a spaceship close by. And so they all manage to make it onto the spaceship. And then they're trying to figure out what happened. Where are we? Who did this to us? How do we get home? And so the group decides that they can make it by making like pit stops at planets on the way to get supplies. And then they'll be able to make it home. And during that trip, you know, they all bond and they realize they have more in common than they thought. For instance, all of their parents hate them.
I noticed that.
They're either orphans or their parents are horrible people, with the exception of Ares. She had a nice mom, but everyone else, no. And then they, you know, if we get into the big reveal, final episode aired over a week ago. So I guess quit listening now if you don't want to know all the secrets of Astra Lost in Space. But everyone's a clone. They're all clones of usually their parents or other important people. And one of the kids' dad is working on like a memory transfer technology. So they're just supposed to serve as like new bodies for their parents to live in whenever they decide to do that. One of the girls has a adopted little sister who's also a clone, who's created just to be spare parts for her mom in case they needed like organ transplants or whatever. So, you know, then they're like, well, fuck old people then. We're going to go back and we're going to get all of our parents thrown in jail and then live out our dreams as we see fit.
Well, yeah. So I didn't quite have the chance to finish this one out, but it's only 12, I think.
Yeah.
It's only 12 episodes, but some of them are like an hour long, something like that.
Yeah, like the first episode was like 3 episode length and the finale is 2 episode length, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But I appreciated, I very much appreciated the writing on this one.
Yeah.
And the animation is really nice. And I really loved how they would change the aspect ratio based on whether or not the aspect ratio of the show, based on whether or not they were in space or not.
Oh, is that when they, okay. I noticed the aspect ratio thing, but I didn't connect it to it being whether they were in space or not.
Yeah. It's whether or not they're in space. I really thought that was cool. I thought that it was, you know, sort of, calling back to some, you know, old movies and, you know,
yeah.
It was calling back to that kind of thing. It really is powerful stuff. Like,
yeah,
this ran in Shonen Jump Plus, right?
I think so. Yeah, it might have eventually moved over to the magazine itself. I'd have to double check, but it was definitely Shonen Jump Plus to start with. So that's usually where they put their more risque stuff sometimes. Right. Although I didn't think this isn't risque. I mean, there might be like a little bit, but it's not. It's very, very tame, I think, as far as fan service.
It's also a little, from what I understand. Now, I've read the manga,
mm-hmm.
and it gets pretty queer.
Yes. So, yeah, it might have been moved over there just because the topics are considered, I don't know, more mature for whatever reason. But one of the characters is revealed to be intersex about midway through the season.
Yeah.
And I feel like it handles that really well. Everyone adapts to that pretty well. I don't feel like the character is sort of written as voyeuristic or anything like that.
No, it's just empathetic. Like,
yeah, it is. And I think the character identifies as male, so they continue to use like male pronouns for him. But the only thing you kind of find out is that his progenitor, they call him the originals, his original like had him designed to be intersex because he thought that was like the ultimate form. I don't know.
Well, anyway,
but the character themselves, I feel like, again, it was pretty good representation as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciated it. Like,
yeah,
it's probably the strongest, like, this show is probably the strongest thing airing this season, I think. Or
as far as like the Shonen Jump selection, I think so, because we've got quite a few Shonen Jump shows airing right now, and I've tried to watch Dr. Stone, but I can't get into it. But this one, I just breezed through it.
Yeah.
They do, conveniently, there's like cliffhangers at the end of every episode, so I'm like, oh, well, wait.
Yeah.
Wait.
It's a little. It reminded me a little like of Escaflowne, where there's always a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every single time, there's a cliffhanger. So the pacing, I thought, was pretty good. Yeah, you're right about Dr. Stone, though. Man, I can't get into it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I can watch one episode of Dr. Stone and get everything that they're going for.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to watch it every week.
Yeah. I've watched, like, the first 10 or so of Demon Slayer, but I've had a harder time getting back into that, too, ever since they introduced that blonde-haired dude.
Yeah.
It just, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of feels like I need to sort of power through his shtick until it goes in the background.
Yeah. No, same. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. This I really enjoyed this. Like, I need to finish it out, but I really enjoyed it. Like,
yeah,
I thought it was well written with very strong characters, and I appreciated what they were doing with that, you know, the intersex stuff. Like, it's good. Like,
yeah, I liked the general message, which I feel is that, like, the older generation tries to forcefully mold the next generation into whatever they want them to be instead of allowing them to, like, self-actualize. I liked that sort of message overall in the show. I thought that was more than I typically get from a Shonen Jump show, although I haven't watched a lot of them. People might get mad at me for saying that.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought it reminded me very much of the, you know, the themes and characters that Anno is into. Anno Haki. Like, he also talks about this kind of thing. So it's kind of that, but, you know, lost
more in palatable
space. Lost in space. Not, well, look, his stuff is palatable. It's very popular. But lost in space instead. So,
yeah.
You know, now I don't know if you've ever seen the film Lost in Space or the TV show Lost in Space, but they certainly pull from that stuff quite a lot. Like,
there's just no wacky robot, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, there's no wacky robot, but I thumbs up. Like, I appreciated it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, and it wraps everything up real nicely at the end. So you find out, you know, exactly, our characters make it back. You find out exactly what happens to them and their shitty parents and, you know, where they go as adults too. Like, it does like a little flash forward 7 years or something like that.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. I wonder if it's adapting the entire manga?
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
And only in 12? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think pretty sure it ended the manga.
Yeah, the manga's over, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The manga's only 5 volumes. So,
they did the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to finish it out at some point, but good stuff. That's the good stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, let's get to our Twitter questions. We got a few. Let's see. From Mark1246. What's an anime you love, but the ending ruined it for you, as in the ending sucked or didn't stick the landing?
What about... The only thing that came to mind immediately was the Madoka Magica Rebellion movie.
Oh, yep, good one. All right, same, yeah. Which premiere fight scene did you like the best? He also asks.
Okay, I only saw the first one, and it was good.
They're all good. There is not a single bad fight scene in that movie. I liked them all, so. Mm. All right, so Angelo3 asks, does Promare lean more towards the dude bro focus found in Gurren Lagann, or is there a nice balance of guys and girls that focuses like a happy medium between that and Kill la Kill? I suppose I would say they kiss at the end.
So what I picked up from it is, like, our main character Gallows, he's pretty bro-y, right? Like
very Gurren Lagann. Yeah,
he's very bro-y, but I didn't feel like the movie itself had that sort of bro, you know, like, feeling to it necessarily. No. And I know there are female characters, like one of the subplots involves the girl inventor and her sister, right? Her sister, like, works in the lab. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a weird thing where it's strength but empathy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yes, I'm kind of a dude, bro.
Right.
I'm strong. But I care about you.
Yeah. Gallows was very endearing. Like, yeah. I found him very endearing because he has that hot-headed, kind of dumb guy personality that they like to use in trigger shows. But I was talking about that pizzeria scene earlier. He stands up for the Burnish who's trying to get arrested. Yeah. Like, you know that he'll stand up for, you know, the marginalized, the people who need him. So
I will use my strength
to protect you.
To protect you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. Divine Nigga asks, which of the Astra Kids stories resonated with you the most and why?
Okay. Well, I think my favorite character was, I think her name is pronounced Yunha. She's the Chinese girl on the ship. And she's very, like, soft-spoken and sort of quiet. She hides herself. She has very low self-esteem. And they're kind of mean to her at first because she's a little chunky. And she kind of has an awakening moment where she finds her own purpose, which is singing. She wants to be a singer. And she cuts her hair and, like, gets a makes herself over to be more open and approachable, and then, you know, has a more active role in the group after that. I don't know if it didn't resonate with me personally. That's not something I personally experienced, but it was the story that I enjoyed the most, watching her overcome that and come into her own.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I think that actually does it for us. Thanks for coming on by.
All right.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for dropping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes and all the other, you know, places we're at. Anyway, we'll see y'all next week.